I'm Tracy Sable. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, a rule for the ages. The nation's highest court issues its much-anticipated decision regarding former President Donald Trump. We have a report and analysis, The Faith in Germany. Analysis of a new report saying 400,000 Catholics officially left the church last year. Elections in France. Why the first round of voting over the weekend delivered a major blow to President Emmanuel Macron. Plus, a place of conviction. A look at a prison in Rome with an unusual connection to Saints Peter and Paul. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. Our top story tonight, a big win today for former president and GOP presidential candidate Donald Trump. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled that presidents are entitled to some immunity from prosecution for official acts committed while in office. The landmark decision delivers a critical blow to the Justice Department's ongoing election interference case and several others against Trump. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us now from outside the court. Eric?
Good evening, Tracy. The 6-3 decision comes 4 months before Election Day. Yes, the justices did decide that former presidents are immune for official acts. However, the justices did not decide if former President Donald Trump is immune from prosecution for alleged acts that he committed during the 2020 election. For that decision, the justices are sending it back to a lower court. Donald Trump praised the ruling, quote, "Big win for our Constitution and democracy. Proud to be an American." Chief Justice John Roberts, writing for the majority, stated in part, quote, "We conclude that under our constitutional structure of separated powers, the nature of presidential power requires that a former president have some immunity from criminal prosecution for official acts during his tenure in office." In her dissent, Justice Sonia Sotomayor wrote, quote, "Today's decision to grant former presidents criminal immunity reshapes the institution of the presidency." Many gathered outside the U.S. Supreme Court when the decision came down, and some say it could open Pandora's box.
So if he were to win again, he could do anything he wants to his opponents. He could put them in jail. He could have them executed. This opens the door to a dictatorship.
Others want Congress to add more justices to the high court.
Absolutely. I think they have to dilute the poison that's there. And the only way to do it, these are young people he put on. We absolutely have to get the votes to be able to pack the court.
President Joe Biden issued a statement reading in part, quote, "Today's ruling doesn't change the facts. So let's be very clear about what happened on January 6th. Donald Trump snapped after he lost the 2020 election and encouraged a mob to overthrow the results of a free and fair election." Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer calls the decision disgraceful by the MAGA SCOTUS and claims it weakens our democracy, while House Speaker Mike Johnson is calling the decision a victory for former President Donald Trump and all future presidents. Bottom line, now federal prosecutor Jack Smith will have to re-examine his case to see if any charges will be brought against former President Donald Trump for his alleged acts on January 6th. Outside the U.S. Supreme Court, Derek Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
And joining us now with more is Derek Mueller, Notre Dame law professor and legal expert. Derek, great to have you back on. As Eric mentioned, the case now heads back to the lower court. Quickly tell us what that process could be like and how long could this potentially take?
Right. So most of the charges are still on the table for Jack Smith after this sending back to the lower court to take a look at. The court said some of Trump's actions, such as trying to persuade the vice president to do things, convincing electors to do things, putting pressure on state officials, those things might be unofficial acts. But instead, it's up to the lower court to look at the facts. Let Jack Smith present his case. Let Donald Trump present his case. And this is a process, though, that could take months, if not years, to get through to completion.
Yeah. And do you think this trial could be before the election? What's the likelihood of that happening?
The chances are basically zero that this goes to trial before the election. There are major complicated questions that the court has sent back. We've got this new opinion with these legal questions about what the Constitution says for unofficial acts and official acts. We have a lot of contentious factual questions about whether or not the acts were official or not, how much could be justified from the office of the presidency, and what executive power is necessary versus those things from a candidate running a campaign. So it will take a long period of time for the lower courts to sort out both the facts and the law. That's why we're not going to see a trial before the November November election.
Yeah, and this is a little confusing to some folks, but what exactly does this mean, this ruling for former President Trump and also for special counsel Jack Smith's case against him?
All right, for Trump, it means that he lives another day, right? The delay is probably the most important part of the decision for him. A limited number of acts, such as pressure he put on the attorney general, are things that will be exempt from prosecution, but the universe is still open for other kinds of conduct to be subject to prosecution. So, and he lives another day, and we'll see what happens on remand. For Smith's team, you know, it's definitely a blow, not only in it being a little bit slower, but that he has to come back to the table and sort of demonstrate why the acts, quite specifically, like detail by detail, conversation by conversation, document by document, were things that fall outside of the office of the president and his ordinary behavior, but fall on the side of those unofficial acts, personal conduct, political and campaign conduct. And so it's just going to be a lot more work for prosecutors for this president and for presidents to come.
Yeah, and how do you think Smith is going to go about doing that, proving what is official and unofficial?
Right. So Trump's attorney at oral argument in front of the Supreme Court conceded some things are unofficial. For instance, we saw Justice Barrett's opinion in the case today indicate, well, when the president is calling up the Speaker of the House of Representatives and trying to pressure him to do something with electoral votes, that's not really what the president does. The president doesn't really have power over state legislatures or state legislators. So those are the things that fall outside of that power. Other things, such as conversations with your vice president, tend to be protected. So there's going to be some fights about these things to say, well, this conversation with the vice president was about a campaign topic and not a governance topic. So it's these kinds of subtle issues that are going to arise. Again, each statement, each document, I'm sending it back and seeing whether or not there's going to be a case for prosecution to come.
All right, we're going to leave it right there. Derek, thank you so much for helping us sort this out. We appreciate it.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
From White House strategist to federal inmate, Steve Bannon is now behind bars and will remain there for the next 4 months. Both supporters and critics showed up to watch Bannon report for prison in Danbury, Connecticut. He is the second former Trump aide to be imprisoned for a contempt of Congress conviction related to the January 6th riots. Well, we are just 2 weeks away from the next big milestone in the presidential election. Milwaukee, Wisconsin will host this year's Republican National Convention. The RNC press secretary told us what to expect.
Donald Trump's coming here. He's going to show off his plans to America. We're bringing the world to Milwaukee and Milwaukee to the world. I mean, the people here are great. And I think what people are going to see when they come to Milwaukee is that Wisconsin nice attitude, the hospitality that we have in the city. Everybody's going to be really impressed.
And workers are moving fast to get things ready and set the stage for the former president to accept the Republican nomination. 50,000 guests are expected. Well, the economy and inflation will be key topics of discussion. EWTN White House correspondent Owen Jensen recently traveled to Wisconsin, an important swing state, to show us how people are coping with the higher costs.
Here in Wisconsin, we found the economy playing out in real life. Like everywhere else, prices are high. Whether you go out to eat or get your food at the grocery store.
At Saints Anthony and Philip Catholic Church in rural Highland, Wisconsin, cars loaded up with food.
We come and we get food for people who can't get out to get it and people who don't get home from work till late.
Inside, volunteers hustling from table to table, filling up grocery carts. Things like milk and eggs ready to go out the door. Catholic Charities and Second Harvest working together in the Diocese of Madison to make it happen.
So how great is the need? Well, here on this average weekday afternoon, just take a look at the line of cars behind me.
Father Tafadzwa Kashamba says it's a blessing to bring the goodness of God to people in need.
If you look at how things have been going so far in our nation, things have become expensive.
His boss, Bishop Donald Hying of Madison, expanded on that while I sat down with him at his office.
The cost of housing, the cost of buying a house, the cost of renting an apartment has just skyrocketed.
And the bishop says something has to give.
Somebody with a limited income, a lower income, is spending all of their resources just for housing, which means food, clothing, medicine, every other need that an individual or family has becomes really at risk.
We've seen big increases in need.
Michelle Orge runs Second Harvest Food Bank in southern Wisconsin. At this facility, gathering, inspecting, and sorting food from various donors. She told us that food insecurity in southwestern Wisconsin has grown.
Folks ask why. Why has it gone up? food costs are higher, wages haven't kept up, you know, folks might not have as many hours at their jobs. It's, you know, the economy isn't treating everyone well.
We also spoke with Brian Jacobson, chief economist at Annex Wealth Management. In addition, he teaches at Marquette University in Milwaukee, where he recently told me inflation is still ugly, but it's getting better. Grocery prices, he maintains, are still too high.
When I see the price of milk, it is actually just eye-popping because I have this frame of reference thinking back to what things were like just a few years ago and how the price of milk is like more than double what it used to be. Lower inflation does not mean lower prices. It just means that they stop rising so quickly.
And when Election Day arrives in November?
It really is about the economy, but not about the national economy. Those numbers can look really positive. Low unemployment rate, decent economic growth, but it's all about your personal economy. How are you actually feeling about your own financial situation?
For now, back at Saints Anthony and Philip Catholic Church, the cars keep coming. That doesn't surprise volunteers like Connie Gard.
Why doesn't it surprise you? I'm sure there's a need out there today.
Mark Hebgen volunteers here as well.
We provide food for an area of about 30 miles here. People drive 30 miles. There is a need with the prices of everything right now. Families are struggling.
Father Kashamba offers hope.
Well, the beauty of the church, people are always available to bring the presence of Christ to the most vulnerable in our society.
With a November election just months away now, whether the economy and inflation are at the top of your list, one thing certain, they will definitely play a pivotal role at the ballot box. In Madison, Wisconsin, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Well, yes, military bases across Europe are on high alert after new intelligence warned of a possible terror threat. At U.S. European Command headquarters in Stuttgart, the Army garrison issued a community-wide alert that the force protection threat level was elevated to condition Charlie until further notice. Similar orders were sent to other bases throughout Europe. Officials say that it is not related to one single threat, but out of concern for various events such as the Euro Cup and the Olympics. All right, for more, let's bring in retired Rear Admiral Mark Montgomery. He serves as Senior Director of the Center on Cyber and Technology Innovation at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. Sir, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate it. So for those not in the military, what does it mean to have the alert level elevated to force protection condition, Charlie? How serious is this?
First, thank you very much for having me, Tracy. And I'll say this is an unusual event. I mean, it happens every, 2 to 3 to 4 years, where through either a very specific threat or an aggregation of threats, we decide to raise the level of force protection at the bases. It makes it much more difficult to enter. It makes it extremely difficult for non-routine visitors to enter the bases. It raises the level of security forces on alert or on duty at any one time. You can only maintain this for a certain amount of time without having to bring out extra forces. So this is an unusual event, usually driven by a specific threat or a series of threats that in aggregate cause the regional commanders to raise the readiness level.
Yeah, and what kind of threat would trigger this response? Do we know?
So I think, a very specific threat would be some kind of intelligence was overheard of a threat to a specific region or base. And even if it's a specific base, you'd raise it throughout the region. But I think in this case, we're talking about an aggregation of threats. And that's the idea that there are many events going on in a region where there's already some anti-American thought or anti-military thought. And so you think about the background of the Russia-Ukraine war, Israel and Hamas, and you layer into that in Europe, there is a major event with the 2024 Olympics coming up. Olympics are always something that bad actors think about interfering with. There's also a major soccer competition going on, the Euro Championship. And I think when you aggregate that together, they decided to raise the readiness kind of proactively.
Yeah, and what exactly does this mean for our troops? I understand those stationed at the bases, they're being told to be vigilant. What type of precautions are they being told to take?
Well, I think there's much more searching of vehicles coming on and off the facilities. I think there's everyone needs to have a more questioning attitude of anyone who confronts them off base and asks them to do something, or who for one reason or another comes into contact with the U.S. military that are not routine, friends. or acquaintances. So I think there's just this higher level of situational awareness, a higher level of questioning attitude, and a higher level of security throughout the facilities.
What about here in the United States, these troops based here, are they worried about anything right now?
I think, you know, geography does have an advantage when you're outside of, say, cyber issues. Geography tends to have an advantage for us. We have good allies and partners in Canada and Mexico and the Atlantic and Pacific oceans. But still, you know, we have had a lot of people come through our border over the last, you know, 8, 10, 12 years, but particularly the last 3 or 4. We have to be concerned that bad actors have gotten in. So I also think around July 4th weekend, we always tend to have a slightly higher level of readiness and concern about our bases, even here in the United States.
Okay, sir, thank you so much for weighing in. We appreciate it, and thank you for your service.
Thank you very much for having me, Tracy.
France appears headed for a major political shift. This after the right-wing National Rally Party notched a victory in the first round of elections over the weekend.
Pour autant, rien n'est gagné.
Marine Le Pen's party secured 33% of the first-round votes. It is a shock to President Emmanuel Macron after he called for the snap elections. National Rally may take an unprecedented number of seats in parliament after voters return to the ballot box next Sunday for the final round. And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including mass exodus. Analysis of the recent report saying 400,000 faithful left the church in Germany last year. Welcome back. The Vatican held another round of talks with leaders of the Synodal Way in Germany. The discussions came one day after an official report said 400,000 German Catholics left the church last year. The number is down from 522,000 a few years ago, but it is still causing alarm. Currently, there are around 20 million Catholics in the Western European nation. All right, for analysis, we turn to A.C. Wimmer, editor-in-chief of CNA Deutsch. A.C., welcome back. Always good to see you, my friend. A lot to discuss here, but I want to start off with this. Can you tell us a little bit more about the recent discussions between the Vatican and the German Synodal Way? I understand the Vatican made a demand regarding the Synodal Way and its relationship to the German Bishops' Conference.
Spot on, Tracy, and great to be here. Thank you. Look, the meeting in Rome on Friday basically meant that the German Synodal Council, which was meant to be a kind of permanent Synodal Way, is not only going to have to change its name, we get to find out how that body might now be labeled according to Rome, but also it will no longer be what it was meant to be, namely something that has authority over the church in Germany or be equal to the German Bishops' Conference. So these are two very significant changes, and we'll have to see how those play out.
Yeah, AC, I want to switch gears slightly here. I know the talks took place one day after an official report said that about 400,000 Catholics officially left the church in Germany last year. Tell us a little bit more about this, and why are so many people leaving?
Tracy, the backdrop couldn't be more stark, really. I mean, talk about a gathering coming at a critical time. So these are official statistics released by the German Bishops' Conference. And just one day before that meeting at the Vatican, yes, you're right, 400,000 people left the church officially in 2023. That means there is an incredible drop. And this year, the year 2024, could mean that the number of Catholics in Germany might drop below 20 million. But what is worse, perhaps, is the fact that only 6.2% attend Mass, Tracy. That's, we've done the numbers at CNA Deutsch, translating to about 1.27 million practicing Catholics in a country of over 80 million.
Well, and AC, how does that compare to other faiths or denominations? Do we know, are there any numbers available for them?
Yes, there are comparable numbers, especially for the Protestant churches, by the way. One should add that the numbers are so precise, not because the Germans love counting, but because the church tax system keeps close numbers on whoever's paying the tax, whoever's registered, not just baptized for paying church tax. So we know that the Catholic Church isn't the only Christian group that is suffering from a decline. The Protestant, the Lutheran Church, of course, Germany being the land of Luther, is declining as well. And on the rise, really, in particular, is secular atheism or agnosticism. The number of people opting out and not paying church tax is on the rise.
AC, before I let you go, how is the church doing overall in Germany?
Look, they're facing a number of difficult challenges here. It's not just the decline in numbers and the decline in mass attendance. It's also a decline in relevance that the German bishops have spoken about considerably to a degree that is notable, even for Germans who are reticent when it comes to this topic, because officially there's meant to be a separation of church and state. Pope Francis has offered the answer. It needs to be evangelization. We'll see how that plays out with the synod on synodality and any way, shape, and form that the German synodal way can now continue.
Well, AC, always good to be with you. Thank you so much for your insights. We appreciate it. God bless.
Thank you. God bless.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, Jailhouse Rock. We take you to a prison in Rome and why tradition holds that it has a connection to St. Peter. Plus, the Holy Father explains why God will never keep us at a distance. Extremely dangerous Category 4 storm makes landfall in the Caribbean. Beryl is the earliest hurricane to form in the Atlantic and the first of this strength to hit in the last 20 years. Officials say electricity blackouts are likely and are urging people to seek shelter. All right, now to the Vatican, where it is now official. Blessed Carlo Acutis is set to be canonized. The computer-coding teenager will become the first millennial to be declared a saint. Today's official announcement came a few weeks after Pope Francis approved a second miracle attributed to Blessed Carlo. No timetable has been set for the canonization mass. However, it is expected to take place during the Jubilee year 2025. Over the weekend, the church celebrated the feasts of Saints Peter and Paul, and they are venerated all over the world, especially in Rome, where the buildings that hold significance in their lives include a prison. EWTN Vatican journalist Benjamin Crockett has more.
Hidden below the Church of Saint Joseph of the Carpenters, among the ruins of ancient Rome, lies the city's oldest maximum security prison, the Mamertine Prison. Situated at the foot of the epicenter of the Roman Empire, in front of the Forum Romanum, the center of public life, it was a clear warning symbol of Rome's unappeasable justice against its enemies.
It wasn't a prison for petty thieves. It was the prison for the enemies of state, for the most important people that they wanted people to see. That these people were being tortured here and they were being sentenced to death.
Accused of treason for refusing to ascribe absolute power and divinity to the Roman Emperor Nero, tradition holds that this is the prison where Saints Peter and Paul were held in captivity before their martyrdom. Despite the harsh conditions of their incarceration, Christian tradition recounts a miraculous event said to have occurred in the deepest level of the prison.
Peter was able to give witness to the gospel even here in the Mamertine prison. His own prison guards who were watching over him, he was able to tell them about the gospel. And they listened to his words and they welcomed the message of the gospel into their hearts. And they wanted to be baptized, but there was no water with which to baptize them. So Peter would have had water spring forth miraculously, and he was able to use that water to baptize them.
After their incarceration, tradition holds that Saint Peter was crucified upside down in Nero's circus on the Vatican Hill, where the obelisk called the Witness still stands today. Saint Paul is said to have been decapitated since Rome did not allow its citizens to be crucified. His severed head allegedly bounced three times, miraculously giving rise to a source of water each time that it touched the ground.
Peter and Paul showed great courage, and with their martyrdom it meant embracing the cross in their lives, and not only in an individual manner, but together. Peter and Paul, who had very different personalities, different approaches, different charisms, still had a great respect for one another and wound up sharing together the experience of martyrdom here in Rome.
Over time, the Mamertine prison became a place of Christian worship, just as the Colosseum and other places of Christian martyrdom in Rome. The frescoes from the first centuries adorning the ancient prison walls undoubtedly testify to this. Whether or not the Mamertine prison was the actual places of St. Peter and Paul's incarceration, their lives and deaths are without a doubt a testimony to a persevering faith. In Rome, Benjamin Crockett, EWTN News Nightly.
Finally tonight, Pope Francis reminds the faithful that when we are suffering, the Lord draws us even closer to him.
Figlio, figlia, alzati.
In his Sunday address to pilgrims at the Vatican, the Holy Father says that God does not discriminate against anyone because he loves all of us. The Pope also emphasized that even in the face of sin, God will not keep us at a distance. And he asks us to likewise be close to friends and family members who might be going through a tough time. And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.